Sweat? You mean armpit tears of weakness brought about by poor deodorant choices? Say goodbye to that salty river that floweth from your underarm with Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Made for 24/7 sweat protection with daily use and an undeniable smell of cedarwood and lime. Mmm. Giving you the confidence you need to quit your job, move to a remote island, and spend your days frolicking with dolphins. Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Shop Old Spice now.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Stevie Nicker. We'll kick things off in North London in the Premier League. What a result for Spurs, thrashing Everton by 5-0, Stevie.
I mean, Evan, absolutely just gift-wrapped the first two goals.
Big 3 points then for the hosts. Let's remind you then what that means in the standings. At the top, let's talk at the top of the table first. Spurs certainly keeping their hopes alive, qualifying for the top four. 3 points adrift of Arsenal in fourth. We'll show you the bottom a little bit later on. Everton, of course, precariously close to relegation zone. As we welcome in, Don Hutchinson, Mark Ogden and Julian Laurent are with us. Right, so Don, in my head, I thought, right, we'll talk about Spurs first and what this means and how they're so inconsistent and what maybe they could achieve come the end of the season. And then we'll talk about Everton and their relegation battle. The problem is, I think it's very difficult, isn't it, to separate the two subjects because, let's face it, if Spurs plays Everton like this every weekend, they'd win the league.
They would. I predicted before the game, Dan, 3. And as it was 3 at half-time, it could have been 7 or 8. I mean, the only positive for Frank Lampard after that game is he knows he can never, ever, ever play that back four ever again. Because the analysis at half-time, the analysis after the game, were calling them a championship back four. And that's exactly what they were. The goals, as Stevie said there, were gifts. The first one was a gift. Pickford was a gift on the second one. And then you rightly say, you go in at 3-0 at half-time. The manager's obviously dug a few out at half-time and he's made a change and he's given one or two a little piece of his mind, and it was probably strong words. And then you think, right, second half, what have they got? 41 seconds into the second half, it's 4 and it's game over. And then the only other positive for Frank Lampard and Everton is Spurs actually took their foot off the gas, because if they wanted to get 7, 8 or 9, it was there for them. It was horrendous from Everton's point of view.
Why do they play such a high line, Stevie? Is that not just inviting trouble?
I don't think they try to play a high line. The way Tottenham play is they sort of try and mug you. I mean, you look at the stats with the ball. I mean, there's not a lot between. There's only 10% between them for possession. So that tells you that all Tottenham were doing was, we're just saying, come on, man, and you come. As soon as you cough it up, then we'll get after you. I mean, that's all they did. It wasn't rocket science.
Right.
Everton coughed the ball up. Youngman Song with pace, with the craft of Kane. And obviously the incompetence that they have at the back, they end up losing 5, and as Don said, should have been more.
Spurs, they're such a lottery. You never quite know what you're going to get, Jules.
Incredible, really. And I don't think we've seen, I mean, we've seen a lot of inconsistency so far this season. That's why if this season feels a bit different than others, maybe. But for them, I mean, certainly the last, 4 to 6 weeks have been incredible, to the point that, obviously, as we saw after the Burnley game, Antonio Conte lost his chisels completely. But I mean, because it's, how can you sometimes play so well? And of course, the opposition helps you. Everton helped massively, Leeds helped massively last weekend as well. And as soon as they played against a more structured team with a better plan, like Southampton, for example, or even Burnley to a certain extent, then they struggle more. But if you play into their hands, that's what they're so good at. And today, I mean, I understand everything. I agree with everything the boy said, but Lampard has to take the blame as well for the tactics and the formation. I mean, that was never going to work. The 5 in midfield, across midfield, I mean, leaving Son and Kulusevski all the time on their own in the pocket, between the lines. There was no awareness from that team. It was so poor from start to finish. You could tell from the beginning it was going to be a very, very difficult night for them.
So, Mark, where do we stand on Spurs' top four chances?
Well, look, they've got a massive game on Saturday, haven't they, at Man United. That's a big game for both. It's a huge... I think if there's a losing that game, they can forget about it. But I think Arsenal right now are obviously in pole position. They've got fourth place. They've got games in hand. But I just think Tottenham are too inconsistent. They won at Man City, then they lost at Burnley and lost at Middlesbrough. So how can we say with any conviction that they will, you know, string a run of results together and get back in the top four. I just don't see it. Look, they've got, in Harry Kane and Son, they've got a fantastic strike duo, but I just don't see them being consistent enough. So I think the game at Old Trafford will probably show us that. You know, United and Spurs, two very inconsistent, hard to predict teams. It could go either way, but you know, Tottenham is still there with a chance, but I think Arsenal have to be the favourites now.
How would you make them consistent, Stevie?
Wow, what a question that is. How do you turn a fiver into a 10-5 note? I mean, the reason that they're inconsistent is because of the players they have. You know, the difference between the top sides and the also-rans is that the also-rans have got good players but can't produce 8 out of 10 every time they step on the field. That's what turns decent teams into great teams.
Right.
And to turn your team into one of the best teams, right now, if you're Spurs, you have to change the personnel. Because I've had long enough under this manager and other managers to try and get some sort of consistency. I mean, a great example is a guy like Ben Davis. Ben Davis against Manchester City was absolutely unbelievable. I'm thinking to myself, this guy is actually beginning to play at this position. And then the next day he steps on the field, he's an absolute embarrassment. So this team, I don't believe, will be consistent
right. Until
you change some of the personnel.
Nothing to do with Conte then? There's nothing he can do because of the players that he's working with?
I don't think so. We're talking about Everton defensively.
Yeah.
Now, I agree what Jules was saying, that you looked at it and you thought, oh, I don't like the look of this. But then you look at who's available. They've got nothing.
Right.
They've got nothing. You've got Seamus Coleman, who unfortunately can't get around and so ends up getting stuck between going forward and defending, ends up doing nothing. You got Keane, who's just not there. You got Holgate, who's not a centre-back. And then you got the left-back, who's not even a left-back. So if you're trying to put, you know, square pegs in round holes,
yeah,
and it doesn't work, don't be surprised. But he doesn't have any other choice.
Meanwhile, for Conte and Spurs, Mark, is he going to be there next season? What is it dependent on factors, if he gets the money in the transfer window, if they finish in Europe? Like, where do we go from here?
Look, I think those factors come into play, but let's be honest, what is Antonio Conte going to get that he's better than Tottenham, considering his track record recently, where he does kind of tend to walk out on jobs when he could be sticking around for a bit longer? So I think Tottenham is a good job. It's a club with a, you know, the ambition of the stadium. It's got money issues, obviously, that have to be addressed, and Harry Kane might leave. But will he get a better job than Tottenham? I don't think he will. I mean, there aren't any jobs in England that are better than Tottenham. I don't think he'll get the Man United job, because he could have had that in November and they chose to go elsewhere. So he might have to be pragmatic and think, you know, this is a big club that can go places with the right management. He has to get into Daniel Levy's head and say, give me more control over player signings than previous managers have had. But I do think that if he sits down and thinks about it, managing Tottenham is not that bad a job at the end of the day. I think he might actually be better staying where he is and trying to turn Tottenham into a team that can challenge properly for the top four again, because they have been a bit hit and miss for the last 2 years. But, you know, I think ultimately, if you ask me now, I think he'll stay.
Meanwhile, let's focus then on the relegation scrap, which Everton are well and truly in. Just take a look at what things look like at the bottom. Norwich are done, aren't they? I think we know that. Meanwhile, Watford and Burnley, and then it is Everton, just 1 point ahead of Burnley. Leeds, of course, in 3-4 at the moment. It's going to be between those five, really, isn't it, when you take a look at it, Don? How much trouble are Everton in?
Huge trouble, Dan. I was watching the game unfold tonight. Leeds are in bad form. Brentford got a good win at the weekend against Norwich. Newcastle, I think, are going to be clear. But I was watching the game tonight, and I was thinking about 1998 when I played for Everton, and we survived on the last day of the season on goal difference at Goodison Park against Coventry. And I went through all the results that season. It was only Arsenal who'd done us four. That was our biggest defeat away from home, the second last game of the season. And we got done four. And we had bottle, Dan. We weren't the best side in the world, but we had bottle. We had good characters, people like Richard Gough, people like Dave Watson, Duncan Ferguson, Nick Barmby. The list goes on and on and on. We weren't the best side in the world, but we had bottle and character. And I was watching this team tonight thinking, they've just been done five, and it could have been eight. And I looked at the fixtures that are coming up, and the next two fixtures at home at Goodison. Frank talked about it after the game, and actually he was quite bullish after the game. He was saying, listen, I need the fans behind us. I'm already thinking about Wolves. I'm already thinking about Newcastle. The two home games on the spin will tell us everything we need to know about Everton. And I'd give them a boxer's chance at Goodison, more so than away from home, because away from home, forget it. It's a fragile team. You know, it's an awful team. It's one of the worst Everton teams I've seen for quite a while. But I'm hoping, and I'm pinning all my hopes on, Everton at Goodison with the fans. They might just be able to dig out a couple of results.
This is very different situation for him, isn't it? From Derby and Chelsea.
Yep.
Just take us into the mindset of a coach who's trying to keep a team up.
Well, in some ways, it's easier than being Chelsea manager and having to win the Champions League and the Premier League, because this is about guts and fight and spirit. That's what this is about. And I agree with Don. This is about Goodison Park, because of all the sides that could go down, they don't have a Goodison Park. They don't. Goodison's an intimidating place, and the pitch is smaller, and that's why they're able to defend better, because Man City last weekend found it hard because the pitch is a little tighter, and so it's easier to defend. So that's what's going to save them. So it's not going to be about tactics. It's going to be about not losing goals. That means that you can concentrate on a shape and a defence and get numbers behind the ball and not leaving gaps. Because when there's gaps, Everton are all over the shop. When there's no space, they as men, they do their own job. And if everybody does their own job, then they'll be fine, because they're at Goodison.
Who's more likely to stay up, Jules? Leeds or Everton?
I mean, the old cliche is now they've got too much, you know, too much to go down. They've got good players, they've got this, they've got that. I still think that Burnley could well go down with Watford and Norwich, and there's the three, and Leeds and Everton just about escape it. Maybe like Don said, on the last day of the season, on goal difference, 1 point clear, 2 points clear. I think Jesse Marsh's debut on Saturday was certainly quite encouraging. I thought, despite the defeat, it's never good to lose, of course, but in the way they played, since Frank has arrived at Everton, you've had a good first half against City, for example, where you go 0-0 at halftime, where you were aggressive and you put some intensity in. You had a couple of good games in the FA Cup. But overall, I'm sorry, I haven't seen much that right now said to me, he's got this. Don't worry, you know, it might be tight, but they will be okay. Because I watched them tonight, and I agree with Don and Stevie, I watched them tonight and said, like, he's got no idea. And I'm not sure. And if you look, by the way, at the schedule between now and the end of the season, this is the worst by far of all the teams in the second half of the table. By far, they've got pretty much every big team, plus Newcastle, who are on fire, plus teams like Leicester that are always awkward to play. This is going to be very, very difficult for Everton, more than for Leeds, I think, to manage to stay up.
They'll be keeping a close eye on some of the matches on Thursday in the Premier League. Leeds are in action, and they'll be hoping that they'll drop points in their tie. They are taking on Aston Villa at Elland Road. Elsewhere, it's Norwich against Chelsea, Saints against Newcastle, and Wolves take on Watford.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
As you can imagine, it's not the most pleasant of reading if you're a Manchester United player. Taking a look at some of the tabloids on Monday. Sad United, shameful, says the back page of Mirror Sport. Of course, this off the back of that 4-1 defeat in the Manchester derby. Mark and Don are with us. Mark, what was interesting today, I thought, was this Marcus Rashford story that comes out that he's thinking about leaving. And it just seems to be continuous bad press all the time for Manchester United. It seems such a leaky dressing room. Why?
Well, as a journalist, I'm not complaining about that, Dan, because that's what keeps us on a living, doesn't it? We like a leaky dressing room, and it tends to be a leaky dressing room when things aren't going very well. It was never a leaky dressing room when Sir Alex Ferguson was in charge and winning things. So, you know, I'm not going to complain about that. But, yeah, the Marcus Rashford situation, you know, I think that, you know, Marcus Rashford, if he wants to leave, then I think he might be surprised at, first of all, where he might end up, because I don't think there's going to be a massive queue for Marcus Rashford. And I think, secondly, I think Man United might think, actually, on your way, Marcus, because you haven't performed now for, what, maybe 2 years, 2.5 years. And I don't think his status at the club is big enough anymore for him to, you know, really hold the club to ransom. This isn't Wayne Rooney talking about wanting to leave in 2010. This is a guy that his career stalled basically for 3 years. So I think Marcus Rashford and quite a few other players, I don't think there'll be people, you know, begging them to stay. I think they'll be opening the door for him to leave. So there's not many that you'd actually say, please stay at the moment. I've got to say that it's a very, very underperforming squad, and the summer's going to be brutal at United. It has to be brutal because there's so many players that have been there for so long.
That's the thing, Mark. I was going to ask you. You've followed this club, of course, for a very long time. If they went, Mark, OK, you've got experience, you know about this club, we're going to put you in charge. What do you do? How do you fix this?
First of all, the biggest thing, they have to get the right manager, and they have to give the manager the mandate to make his own decisions. They can't allow transfer decisions, recruitment, outgoings, ingoing, incomings to be decided by a football committee. The manager has to be the biggest personality at the football club, and he has to decide, like Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola, it has to be through him. Now, I think that although a lot of the players at United are performing terribly at the moment, I do think that with the right acquisitions, that some of those players can actually be elevated to a different level and perform better. I think if they get some, maybe a decent commanding midfielder, I think Fred and McTominay might be decent. At the moment, they're not. I think that is the worst midfield United have had for a long time. And the poverty of that midfield is why the defence is playing so badly, why Harry Maguire and Victor Lindelof are playing so badly, because the midfield's offering no protection. So you've got to get a manager who identifies that and brings in the right players. People talk about leadership. It's not about leadership. It's more about character, and the character to have the ability to fight through it when the game's going against you. United don't pull it out of the fire. When the game's going against them, when they concede or when they, you know, when they go behind, they don't fight back. So the new manager has got so many problems to deal with, but I think initially he has to be allowed to get on with the job and allowed to make his decisions and stand or fall by his decisions. Too often in the past, maybe 10 years, players have come in that either weren't the manager's signings, like Donny van de Beek, for instance, Solskjaer didn't want him, or players that have been well past the best, Falcao, Sanchez, Ibrahimovic, Cavani, Ronaldo, it goes on and on. Give the manager his head, let him get on with it, and let him decide who he wants and who can come in.
The general consensus, obviously, Mark, is that it will be Pochettino, the new manager. If you're Pochettino, do you really want this job? Do you want to be taking over a team that's going to be in the Europa League, coming from PSG?
If I was Pochettino, I'd say no. But there are other issues at play. You know, his family still live in London. He's not settled in Paris. He still lives in a hotel in Paris. And I think you can't, you know, overstate how big the Premier League is to a coach or a player. The Premier League is the best league in the world, and they all want to be there. And I suppose at PSG, you know that you're on borrowed time. From the day you start, you know that if you're a coach, you probably last 2-3 years at most, because the players run the dressing room at PSG. Now, people might say the players run the dressing room at Man United. Perhaps they do. But those players that maybe run the dressing room aren't performing well enough to stay there. So I think whoever comes in can deal with that quite easily. Yes, it's a mess. It's a club and it's a team that really needs 2 or 3 years to get back to where it needs to be. But we've been saying that for 2 or 3 years, for 5 or 6 years. It doesn't go away, this story. But the right manager can have an impact, but it does need patience, and United have to accept that they're not going to be up there with Liverpool and Man City straight away. We talk about Pochettino. I think Pochettino is the favourite, but there is a lot of interest in Erik ten Hag at Ajax and Luis Enrique, who's the Spain coach. So there are people that may surprise us yet, but I do think Pochettino ticks the right boxes at the moment in the list of candidates they're looking at.
You get the right manager, Mark, but recruitment is still going to be an issue, isn't it? Because the allure of Manchester United isn't what it was a decade ago. If you've got other clubs in for you that can offer you Champions League football and the chance to win trophies, then it's a big, big problem, isn't it? If you're United trying to get these big players in ahead of other clubs that you're fighting with.
It is, and it absolutely is. And I think the problem is that United then fall into the trap they've fallen into too often the last few years, that they pay big wages, but they will pay over the odds to get players in when, you know, the player could go somewhere else for less money, but maybe win more trophies, but players will go where the money is, by and large. So United can still attract players, they've still got the money to do it, but they're getting probably the wrong players, and they're paying too much money for the players that they're getting. So they're caught in a kind of a catch-22 situation. They need more players, but the recruitment team isn't great and they need to get players out. You could make a case for 15 players leaving this summer. You really could. There's so many players that aren't even there at the moment. Anthony Martial, Van der Beek. What happens to those? Lingard's out of contract. Pogba's out of contract. Mata's out of contract. All these players that will go. But there are so many. Phil Jones. What happens to Phil Jones? What happens to Wan-Bissaka, who is just not up to it? What happens to, you know, Diogo Dalot, who again isn't up to it? There's so many players that aren't up to it at Man United, but they can't get rid of them all. Ronaldo may go. There's all these problems and questions that can't be resolved in one summer. And that is a problem. They're always playing catch-up and trying to address issues that should have been addressed a long time ago. Like, why did they give Juan Mata a contract last summer? They could have let him go, but they gave him a new contract. So many mistakes from the past 5 or 6 years they're having to unpick. And it'll take a long time. It can't be done in one summer.
Don, how low is that dressing room at the moment?
Oh, it's lower than a snake's belly. It has to be, Dan. Because you're looking at a side now, as Mark said there, you're looking at the individuals, you're looking at the number of individuals where you just think they're not up to it. And there's so many questions that's going to be asked in the summer. The likelihood that Cavani will probably leave, Ronaldo might leave. You know, there's so many players who are not in good form. There's talk of Harry Maguire, maybe Lindelof, Eric Bailly. You know, Mark's mentioned the individuals. Paul Pogba's another one. There's so much surgery for a manager to come in the summer. I mean, at the moment, Dan, forget about the summer if you're Man United. I mean, I know they'll have eyes and designs on getting the next manager in, but top four has to be paramount, because if they don't get top four, you could be looking at a Man United side. And me and Stevie know it took Liverpool close to 30 years to get back to the top. It took them an awful long time. And it could be the same sort of scenario, I think, as Mark said there, 2 or 3 years. I think that's being optimistic. I think it's more like 6 or 7. I think they're miles off it. So the important thing for Man United is somehow this dressing room's got to get together. A meeting has to happen between just the players. Forget Ralph Rangnick and the coaching staff. Me and Stevie have been in plenty of meetings where you'll call a meeting on, Dan, and it'll be players only. And you'll quite aggressive with each other. You'll get a few home truths across. It might be quite lively. No managers, no staff allowed in the meeting whatsoever.
Yeah, but who's calling that meeting? Who's leading that meeting?
Well, that has to be from the skipper. So whoever that might be, if it's Harry Maguire, if it's Ronaldo, if there's bigger characters, someone can call it on. You don't have to have an armband. You know, you can be Nemanja Matic and you call the meeting on. It doesn't matter who it is, but someone's got to stand up and go, come on, lads, this is ridiculous. What's going on? Is that outrageous? It might be Bruno. It might be Bruno Fernandes. Someone calls that meeting on and you just lock the door and you have it out with every individual. And then hopefully you just sort of get everything off your chest. Then that training session that day can be a little bit more livelier. But I wasn't surprised, Dan, they got walloped against Man City. I wasn't. Everyone was going, it's Man United.
Yeah, no, I understand. But surely you must have been surprised. And I think a lot of people were by that second half performance. That last 15 minutes, they just gave up. Completely and utterly gave up.
Oh, I don't know.
Not really. They've done that against Liverpool. They've done that against Liverpool and done it against City.
No.
So I understand, Don's, you know, you get the players together, but hasn't the horse's bolted, isn't it?
The thing is, in a case like this, because it's Man United, because the whole thing has been going on for so long, then we go, they weren't trying. They were this. Listen, the truth is, Manchester City were absolutely fantastic. They couldn't get the ball off them. They'd already spent 75 minutes chasing to get the ball, and Man City were toying with them. Physically, to get that done to you for such a long period of time absolutely drains the life out of you. And against a team like Man City, it only takes one not to be in the right place or closing the right ball. Then a team like City are going to just walk past you. They're going to pass through you for fun, regardless of whether you're trying or not. They are so good.
So are we making too big a deal of this because it was City? Can you turn the page and go, right, boys, Spurs, we know we can beat Spurs. We know they've got vulnerabilities.
We 100% need to stop thinking about Manchester United of Fergie days and when they were a proper team. We need to forget about that. If we think they're going to turn around and start putting a run of games together and playing like Liverpool or City or Real Madrid or anybody else. Forget it. They don't have the players to do it. It's just, it's got to a stage now where we need to realise that Manchester United right now are in the position Liverpool were in when I was there in 1993.
Right.
Where we weren't European champions anymore. We weren't the team that was... We used to be the team to beat. Always. That disappeared quickly. And the sooner that they realise that, the sooner they can actually move forward. Because right now, I mean, the roof's caving in and nobody seems able to stop it, whether it's from inside the club or outside the club.
Was Cristiano Ronaldo injured, Mark?
Well, we pushed Rav Ranić on that and he insisted that his medical staff said he was injured, that he had a hip problem, so we have to go with that. But, you know, we pushed him quite hard and he didn't book us. So he says that Ronaldo's injured, medical staff said it, so we have to take his word for it. But, but let's be honest, you know, Ronaldo didn't play at Chelsea under Michael Carrick and I don't think he's a player now that can perform in those games against the big teams away from home. So if he had been dropped, it would be the right decision. But Ranić said he was injured, so we have to take his word for it.
If only there was some sort of social media platform that maybe Cristiano Ronaldo could use to address this and maybe put it to bed. Like, why doesn't he just go on Instagram, go, look, here I am with the doctor, look at my hip, here we go.
Yeah, he's suggesting that Cristiano uses social media quite a lot. Look, there's obviously an issue here. There's what they say is no smoke without fire. I don't think Ronaldo's been happy for a while. He's clearly not happy the way that he's used by Ranić and he's not performing well. I think he scored twice in 2022. So there are issues to address there. It's just another problem. It's another problem that United have got. And they've kind of brought this on themselves by appointing an interim manager and not being bold enough in November to get a proper manager and a permanent manager. When you've got an interim manager with a dressing room that's kind of disrupted, the players don't care what he says because they know that he's not going to be there. And most of the players aren't going to be there. So he's got no authority whatsoever. So it's no surprise that all these issues are coming to a head.
How problematic is this Ronaldo situation within the dressing room, Don?
I don't think you can launch it all on sort of Ronaldo. I mean, ask Villarreal and ask Atalanta fans what they think about Ronaldo when he was scoring last-minute goals in the Champions League and he got them through. You're just looking at a guy, and it's horrible to say, because someone like me should never, ever criticise someone like Ronaldo, one of the world's very best. But we all know as players, father time catches up to you. And you get to a point in your career where you, especially when you talk Ronaldo, his body's there, he's still immaculate, but you just start to lose that half a yard. And then players who feared Ronaldo back in the day, all of a sudden they see him and they not see the Ronaldo that he once was, and they get a little bit tighter to him and they stop him from playing and he wanders into wide areas. So we're not seeing the same player. But I think to launch it really all on him, because he's the superstar and the biggest name at Man United, I think it's a little bit harsh, to be honest, Dan.
How do you deal with this, Stevie? I agree with Don, in fact, that obviously this isn't United's biggest problem at the moment, but it is an issue.
Well, the manager, absolutely, 100%, has shown how naive he is when it comes to opening his mouth in front of the press. And when your manager's opening his mouth and saying the wrong thing all the time. I mean, he came out and said, well, some of the players are frustrated with their teammates. Now, to us, that is absolute gold, because straight away you go, well, hold on a minute. So that means the guy who's thinking it is saying, it's not my fault, it's your fault. And then, I mean, just everything he says it wrong. The Ronaldo injury. Oh, Ronaldo's not with you. No, he's injured. He's dead.
Yeah.
Instead of, well, I've got to go with the medical staff. I mean, are you stupid? So, straight away, the guy who's supposed to be in charge, the guy who we say has to be what Fergie was, the most important person in the building, is throwing them all under the bus and making it worse. So what chance have you got? The guy in charge. Sorry.
A lot more about what happened in the Manchester derby, and indeed lots of talking points from the weekend away from the Premier League on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Be sure to check that out over on our website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Of course, Real Madrid's focus turns to the Wednesday tie against PSG in the Champions League. Carlo Ancelotti's side have it all to do. 1-0 down, of course, after the first leg. No Casemiro, no Mendy either. Both will be suspended for that tie. Julien Laurent back with us. Jules, Mbappe, how is he?
He's a bit better now. There's far more optimism than there was this morning when that big scare happened at training when Idriss Agey stamped on Mbappe's left foot during a simple drill. I think it was like just keeping the ball around. It was not even nothing special. He went to the American hospital in the year to have some scans that didn't reveal any fracture, like the medical staff feared at some point. He was damaged in pain. And now he's done a few more treatments this afternoon and he will continue tomorrow all day, of course. And then the morning of the game as well. But there's far more optimism tonight that he would be able to even start the game on Wednesday. So we went from really like a big scare to the point that they thought he might not be even able to be in the squad to actually he should be fine. And they're certainly hoping that he would be able to start. Even if he's just 80, 90% of his ability, they will take that.
He didn't feature, of course, suspended for the game against Nice at the PSG loss. We had Frank Leboeuf on at the weekend and saying, look, don't read into this, Jules, because basically everyone was conserving themselves for Wednesday. Is that fair?
I don't think so. I mean, yeah, maybe they didn't want to get injured for the Madrid game, but they were still poor. They could hardly create anything. I mean, even Messi, there was no one running in front of him if he wanted to pass the ball or find someone into space. Di Maria did it once in the first half and that was pretty much it. That's all. PSG was so average, so disappointing again in the collective expression that they had on the ball. And Nice played well, defended well, they were well organized and very solid like Galtier's team do against PSG, and that's why he has such an amazing record against the Parisians. But it was so disappointing, and of course a team with Kylian and without Kylian is very different. It's a no-brainer. But still, you didn't expect them to be that bad without him. And yet, it was another reminder that this team is Mbappe's team and that when he's not there, there's not much left. Despite all the talent that you can still see on the pitch, collectively, there's not enough. So it would be a disaster for PSG if he was out for the game on Wednesday, even if he was just on the bench. And certainly, having him back in the game, in the team, would be a huge boost as well, because even the players, I think, and Pochettino know that without him, you take a lot away from that team.
The big criticism, of course, labelled Carlo Ancelotti after the first leg, too defensive. You went there looking for a goalless draw. How much does he have to temper then the team's desire to go for it and the crowd's desire to go for it in that second leg at the Bernabeu? Because you know, if you do that, if you're Real Madrid, you're leaving yourself exposed. Yep. And with someone like Kylian Mbappe on the pitch, he's going to punish you.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. They certainly aren't going to play the way they did defensively. They are going to be trying to get on the front foot, but they're going to do it in a controlled manner. And that means that they do it as a unit. The back, the middle and the front are all going to close down together and they're all going to drop off together. It's one goal. That's all it is. It's one goal. So it's about making sure you make no mistakes, but you go forward when it's on. And if they have that mentality, we go forward when it's on, but we make no mistakes, then they've got 90 minutes to get a goal. They are at home. And so I think they're going to win the game, particularly with Mbappe not
Stevie,
not
I was going to tease. I was going to say you're on tomorrow. We'll get your prediction tomorrow. And now
no,
people...
Now that the fact that he's not playing, I'm pretty confident.
Well, he might be playing, Jules said. We're not listening.
Uh-uh.
No?
Nope.
Right.
Don told me earlier.
Dr. Stevie, thank you very much. Of course, we'll be looking ahead to the game in more detail on tomorrow's show. Meanwhile, we saw those terrible scenes, didn't we, on Saturday in Liga MX when Querétaro and Atlas faced off against each other. The game was abandoned in the 63rd minute after a brawl that broke out in the stands. Saw fans basically fleeing to the field. For more on this, we're joined by Sebastian Salazar. Seb, what really struck me about this story is the fact there seems to be so many different reports coming out about the number of injuries, about the number of people who've been seriously hurt. Can you clear any of this up?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, it's important to kind of say where we are with what's happened since the incident, right? The league went out and banned the barras, the supporters groups, from traveling to away games. Today, we find out that they are going to play match day 10 pretty much as scheduled, with the one exception of Querétaro. They're supposed to play on Friday night, and their fate as a club right now very much hangs in the balance. We can get into that a little bit later on. What we do know, and maybe it's important to start with there first, local authorities have just recently, in the last few hours, announced 15 arrest warrants for those involved. However, here we are almost 48 hours from the incident, and still no arrests have been made. And as you mentioned, I think what is confusing people the most is that as of right now, we have no official report from any official channel of any deaths at this event. However, there are multiple journalists now in Mexico who are claiming that there were deaths either at La Corregidora, which is where Querétaro plays, or just outside the stadium. So I think it's safe to say that the next 24 to 48 hours are going to be really decisive here, Dan, as that news continues to filter out and break.
And people maybe who haven't seen it, like speculating, well, why is there the assumption that there were deaths? Mm-hmm. And I think anyone who saw those videos who were just horrific that were coming out on Saturday, that's why people are connecting those dots, Seb.
Yeah, obviously, the videos, not that were broadcast, right, not that were transmitted, but what's happening in these stadiums now is everybody is a news gatherer and everybody has a phone. So the videos that came out from cell phones are horrifically graphic. It's also worth, Dan, noting here that there is a long history in Mexico of misinformation when it comes to events like this. You can go back to the 60s, violence against students. You can go back much more recently, violence against activists. And the Mexican government has not always covered itself in glory when it comes to spreading the truth about what's happening in those events. So you mix the video that we saw and the history in Mexico of misinformation, and I think that's why you're getting a lot of people that don't believe what we're hearing right now from the state authorities and from the Mexican League, which is that no one died in these horrific events.
Could we see Querétaro kicked out of the league, Seb?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tuesday morning, there's going to be an emergency meeting of the Liga MX owners, and I think the question is not whether they're going to get kicked out. It's for how long, right? Will they be able to come back after a one-year ban? Or is this the end of Querétaro as we know it? And right now, the early reports, again, this meeting will take place tomorrow, is that already the owners, the other owners of Liga MX clubs are looking at banning Querétaro for good. So that would mean Querétaro out of Liga MX for an indefinite period of time, if not forever. I think there's also a greater concern, Dan, for Mexican soccer. I mean, if you look at kind of comparable events, and you hate to compare tragedies, but you can go back to what happened in 2012 in Egypt. The league didn't play for 2 years after that. Now, that was governmental decisions, but the league itself disappeared for 2 years. If you want to go back to the 1985 European Cup final, Liverpool-Juventus, Liverpool, not just Liverpool, all English clubs missed continental competition for 5 years. So if we go back and look at prior precedent, it's not just Querétaro that could be in a lot of trouble here. Mexican football as a whole, I think, has a lot to be worried about.
Mexico, of course, supposed to be hosting some World Cup matches in 2026. Mm-hmm. Does this have any sort of effect on that, Seb?
I mean, what we're hearing right now out of Mexico is that, like, FIFA and CONCACAF, because this was a Liga MX event, don't necessarily have the jurisdiction to go in and address that. But I think the reality is this. FIFA's going to have to look at this, and really, CONCACAF is going to have to look at it much sooner. We've got MLS teams coming down here going down to Mexico for CONCACAF Champions League in the next week. We've got the U.S. playing Mexico in a World Cup qualifier in Mexico City on March 24th. We got the CONCACAF Champions Women's Championship coming up later this summer in Monterrey. And as you mentioned, not just the upcoming World Cup, but 2026, which at least a few games are supposed to be hosted in Mexico. Right now for Mexican soccer, there's a lot of events, a lot of things that stand to be lost if FIFA does intervene. So I think right now there are events kind of in the short term, Dan, that Mexico needs to be worried about keeping. But absolutely, I don't know how FIFA can turn a blind eye to this looking ahead to 2026.
I understand you and Seb will be dedicating the whole of Football Americas today to this incident, Seb. What can people expect from the show?
Right, so obviously Herc and I will be on. We'll be giving our reaction. We're going to have Mauricio Pedrosa and Cristina Alexander, a couple of our colleagues from ESPN Deportes, who are going to join us as well. We're also going to have Emmanuel Macias. He's a television and radio reporter based in Querétaro who is at La Corregidora. So he's going to give us kind of that firsthand perspective of what he witnessed in the tragic events of Saturday. It's not the show we were looking forward to doing on this Monday, Dan, but I think it's probably one of the most important shows that we've come across in our brief history.
Yeah, sure, that needs to be done. Thank you very much, Seb. Much appreciated. Just a reminder then, Football America's available on ESPN Plus tonight. Be sure to check it out. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everybody who has been on. Fear not, though, Stevie. It's not ended yet.
No.
No.
Why?
Extra Time is next.
Oh, yes.
Who's back? I think Don and Jules are back with us to answer your tweets.
By the way, can I just say, you know, the other day we were talking and Don said that...
Welcome to Extra Time. Stevie's just started talking before we started.
Don said he fancied Southampton to knock out City.
Did he?
And yeah. They got beat 4-0 the following day.
Villa beat them 4-0, yeah?
Villa beat them 4-0, them.
Oh,
look.
Oh, dear. How are you, Don? Jules, same clothes you're wearing in the Gavin Jules podcast.
You're busy, man.
Yeah, I didn't change since this morning. Is that okay? Or do I need to change twice my outfit like you do?
I thought, you know, just for TV purposes, you might change, make a little bit of an effort, Jules, but there we are. I mean, I saw you tag the people who make that
this
shirt.
This was good.
That's a freebie, I assume, yeah, Jules? Yeah, there you go. It's yes, like Don and his freebie.
It's a French guy in the US. In Chicago. I make sure that he sends you one as well.
Yes, please. I mean,
what the rest is? Are we chopped liver?
Maybe they don't make it your size.
What, extra small? Hey, by the way, talking about making it in your size, they don't do kids either,
they
by
do.
The way.
They do. Everyone knows kids is where the money is, isn't it?
Tell them under 10s.
Hey, Don, how's your wife, Don? She's almost having the baby soon.
Yeah, she is. What have we got? 6 weeks-ish? April 11th?
Oh. Wow. Are you helping Don man. Foot rub every night?
No, I'm in the spare room.
Right, for Don, the percentage chance of Everton being relegated from the Premier League.
Oh, Dan. I reckon it's about a 33 and a third. I think there's three teams in it. It's that old 33 and a third jobby, or whatever it is. I think there's Burnley, Everton, Leeds. Between those three fighting for one spot, I think Norwich and Watford have gone.
And it's equal chance between all those three?
I think so. Everyone must be petrified. I mean, Leeds are in free fall, got a new manager in. Frank's only been there 5 minutes. They've got two home games against Wolves and Newcastle, where I think they might be okay, but with no certainty whatsoever. And Burnley, they were a little bit, I say, unlucky loosely, because for 45 minutes against Chelsea were good, but second half fell apart.
So what if I was to say Burnley is 45%, Don? How would that, that would that reflect blow my the mind, other two
Dan.
Teams?
No, Dan, that would blow my mind.
Don, a lot of questions for you. When do you think the allure of Manchester United will start to diminish for top players? Any top player who's made a move to Manchester United has had a negative career impact after joining. And also, do they need to start investing more in developing their academy players?
Well, they've always had a good academy. I think there was a stat, knocking around, at the start of the season, where something like 19, 20 odd years, they've always had an academy player. So that's not a problem I wouldn't have thought for Man U. It will diminish if they don't get top four. I mean, because you can only get by a certain amount of years if you don't get the Champions League. And United are United. They've still got the pulling power, one of the biggest in the world. And like we saw with Alexis Sanchez, they'll pay someone ridiculous amounts of money to get them to their football club. Now, whether you get the right ones in or not, that's a different question.
What about your friend Harry Kane, Don?
Well, the rumours are, Jules might know more than I do, but the rumours are if Pochettino goes Man United, he wants to take Kane.
Would you go to United if you were Kane, Jules?
I mean, I think if you're Kane, you want to watch with, you want to work with Pochettino again, that might be a possibility, although it depends as well why he's on the table. If there's a City, for example, or something, that might be a bit more difficult. But they certainly need a striker, United. I mean, Cristiano, this can't continue. Cavani will go. There's Greenwood, of course. So they need someone. So, you know, you can try Haaland again, and very likely he will be another no, like he did before. But there's not that many available anyway. So I think if you're United and you get Poch, you have to put it, go all in on Kane and hope that you somehow manage to convince him.
Even if Poch is not there, if you're Kane, you go to United before you stay at Tottenham.
Right.
Absolutely. I don't even think it's close. Not even a question.
Because it's Manchester United?
Yeah.
Because it's such a big team.
Well, Tottenham, the chances of Tottenham, I mean, we're talking about Tottenham trying to compete with the top four. You know, the chances of Man United 100% competing in the top four next year are way above what Spurs are.
Why?
Well, just because they can go out to someone and buy players. Tottenham ain't going to do that. No chance.
Stevie, what is the approach of teams when they are playing the chasing game in the second leg, like Real Madrid against PSG? Would not having a away goal advantage affect the way this game will be played?
Yes, completely. If you're Real Madrid, you have to make sure you get the balance right between being tight and going forward. Okay. That's the key. If you go gangbuster early doors and lose a goal, then, you know, you've shot yourself in the foot before you even got going. So because it's only one, then you just methodically make your way up the field with the first thought of playing the ball forward.
Okay.
That's what they didn't do in the first leg. They were too busy defending that they forgot to play the ball forward. They have to get the balance right at home. To give nothing away, but if there's a ball to go forward, then you play it.
Where will you be watching the game, Jules?
I'm covering the game for ESPN, so I'll be at the Bernabeu. Yeah,
big
yeah,
time,
yeah.
Big
I'll jinx
time.
The team. I know PSG will be good. Knocked out. I'll be jinxing the team.
That's it.
Double I know blind. It's already. I can tell you that right
clothes?
Now. I know it.
Same gear, Jules?
Different clothes?
Different clothes.
Different clothes. I've got my lucky PSG Jesus. Shirt that I bring with me everywhere, you know.
Oh, no. Stinks.
That, yeah.
If Wayne Rooney, Jules, keeps Derby from being relegated after a 21-point deduction, is it the greatest accomplishment of his playing coaching career? They're currently 22nd, they're 5 points off Reading in safety.
Yeah, and they had all those, obviously, I think the 12-point penalty. I think if he keeps them up, he deserves to be the Premier League Manager of the Year, although he's in the Championship. He can win the Championship Manager of the Year and the Premier League Manager of the Year and all the other Managers of the Year you want, because it's not a very good squad. And yet, for him to if they do it, to manage to keep them up with the points penalty, reviving a career, or certainly at this level of someone like Ravel Morrison, for example, who, as we all know, was an incredible talent, lost his way completely, and now you watch him at the weekend scoring two goals, he's a completely different player, and you think, okay, Wayne is clearly doing a lot of very positive things and good things, that doesn't mean that he would be an amazing manager at a bigger club, winning bigger trophies, but certainly in the current context at Derby, where they are and what he has to do, he's doing an incredible job, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for it.
For Don, could Tammy Abraham have helped Chelsea win the Premier League this season? He scored 20 in his first season with Roma. Surely he could have given them more than Lukaku.
I think I seen something yesterday. I was working down on the Napoli-Milan game and Giroud scored for Milan. He scored the win, and I think I read that between Tammy Abraham and Giroud, since they've left Chelsea, they've scored 63 between them. So not a bad return. And Tammy, by the way, I mean, what a job he's done in Serie A, hitting 20-odd goals. Incredible. I would say
what
no.
Would Lukaku, what would Lukaku do in Serie A?
This sounds a little familiar, doesn't it?
I would say Tammy. No, though. I think Tammy had to make the move. I think, to be honest, he was a brave kid. I watched Tomori play for Milan last night, and I'm very envious of these young players going to Serie A and the boys that went to Bundesliga and playing. Good luck to them, you know. Good luck to those young kids playing abroad.
Oh, that's a nice little pat on the head. Well done, boys.
No, but I'm envious.
You're trying very hard, getting paid millions of euros to do that.
No, but I'm very envious of them.
Did you have any offers to go abroad, Don?
I didn't have an offer, Dan, but I had a rumour of Inter Milan back in the day.
Did you start the rumour?
Yes.
Jules, why do you live in London?
Why do I live in London? I moved here for work when I was working for Le Parisien newspaper. They sent me over here to be their correspondent. And then I met Mrs. L here. The children were born here. Life is good here. So I stay. We're not far from Paris. So, you know, we can go often, to be fair. So it's good here. It's really good here.
Frank has told me he's already booked a restaurant for you two for the Champions League final. He's very excited about you going over.
I don't know, but certainly when he came to London, he kept asking me, give me a good romantic dinner for me and my wife. And I was like, all right, I don't want to know too much what you're going to do on your Monday night or Tuesday night in London with Mrs. LeBeuf. So I gave him a few addresses. In Paris, I think I would rather pick the restaurant than him. Somehow, I don't really trust him with his taste.
Why?
Have you told
I'm
him?
Not sure. I mean, and why? You know, what is he going to wear there? Is he going to wear that, like, camouflage top that he had the other day on the show? Like, hey. I would rather be in control.
You can guarantee, Jules, there will be a picture of Frank LeBeuf on the wall of the restaurant somewhere.
Yeah, certainty.
yeah, exactly.
Okay, where are we? This is a question for everyone. Last decade or two would have seen on every corner two defenders covering each post. Oh, this is your...
On my street.
No one stands there anymore and many goals enter on the opposite side of the keeper. Why not bring it back? Players on post for set pieces,
absolutely.
Stevie.
I don't get it. I really don't understand why all of a sudden nobody does it.
Why don't they do it, Jules?
Madness.
It's a good question. I think, especially the zonal marking on corners, I think some of the players are told to take two steps back, to go towards the post if needed. The problem is, a lot of them, I don't think, maybe are intelligent enough, or certainly not aware enough, or are not reactive enough to do it. So I think Stevie is right. A lot of the managers, especially, we know the teams are struggling on set pieces defensively. Come on, just go old school, do it, and it might help you actually to be a bit more solid.
Don, did they stick you on a post?
I used to like being free, Dan, because I remember having a conversation with Peter Reid, and I was too offensively minded, where I couldn't be trusted, because if I seen a ball coming from the corner and I seen like my goalkeeper, like favourite to win it, what I would do is I'd sprint out my own 18-yard box thinking, yeah, he's definitely going to catch this, and then I'd sprint off. So I'd have so much trust, but I was so offensively minded, I couldn't be trusted to mark someone. So Peter Reid was a good manager for me. He had a little hybrid system sort of going, where you'd have your best defenders marking the opposition's best headers. Then he would say to me, right, I'm going to put you in the front zone. And if any balls come in that front zone,
just go and attack the ball and win it in the air. But I'm not going to put you on a man-to-man marker because I know you'll end up watching the ball and you'll get carried away and you'll switch off. Because I was too, like a Labrador, I was just like, just buzzing all the time.
Well, couldn't they just have tied you to a post? Surely if he just said, stand by that post, you could manage that.
No, because I was good in the air. No, because then that was me wasted because I was good in the air. So I actually liked heading the ball. And I was a good header of the ball. I just couldn't... Stevie understands and Jules understands.
He's headed a lot of balls.
I couldn't man mark someone. I'd be watching the flight of it thinking the goalkeeper's getting this. I'm off.
Right.
Like, you couldn't trust me.
Would you have liked to have coached on?
No, thanks.
Jules, what's the most beautiful team name to say of the top five leagues this season, apart from Sassuolo? Oh, you got to have a bit of Borussia Mönchengladbach.
No.
Yes.
No.
Wang on.
What's going on? It's not Wang on, Dan.
Wang on. What is it?
Wang on.
Gangon, to be fair, the second division.
I
think Reims, obviously, where the Champagne region, where all the really good Champagne is from in France, because no one can say Reims, which is R-E-I-M-S. So people say Rims, people say also, they get confused with Rennes, which is R-E-N-N-E-S. I get also, so I think Reims probably has to win this one.
What do you like saying, Don?
Rance is a good one though, because I was one of them when I first done my French commentary about 4 or 5 years ago, and I was doing a Rance and I went, who's this team? Reims. Never heard of Reims. Never heard of them. And then my comms guy had to go, it's not Reims, Don, it's Rance.
How about Inverness, Clackenacudden?
Well, they're not in the top five leagues.
In Scotland, they are.
Are they?
Aye.
In the Premiership?
I think.
Yeah, right. You have no idea where they are. Okay, final question, and it's a serious one for you, Stevie.
All right.
Start, bench, or drop? Chips, beer, shepherd's pie.
Wow! Wow!
That's a starter.
Impossible. That's impossible for Stevie.
No, it's not. Because they all work out in a row.
Right. Can I guess?
Yes.
I think you would start beer.
Yep.
You would drop shepherd's pie.
Correct.
And
finish the night off with a bag of crisps. Easy peasy.
Yeah. That's it, guys. Thank you very much. ESPN FC back tomorrow. Champions League, of course, dominates over the next couple of days. Some cracking second legs coming up. Be sure to join them. Join us as we'll be bringing you everything you need to know about them.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.